in a video nasty. I wouldn't. I have far too much.
How can you judge on a video nasty? Oh, you've never seen one.
I actually don't need to see visually what I know is in that film.
Hello there, and welcome to the Video Nasties podcast. My name's Chris Brown. Some films get notoriety thrust upon them, whether that be because of things like the Video Nasties controversy, for example, or by a certain actor becoming famous after the events of the filming, like a very youthful Leonardo DiCaprio popping up in Critters 3. Then there are other films that deserve a little bit more reassessment. Not a lot of the films on the Video Nasties list are lost classics, but on occasion, there's one that could do with being looked at again. This film, not even one of the true 39 that remained on the list throughout the Video Nasties storm. I mean, The Slayer is an unfortunate film that has been saddled with some fairly rotten luck. It's a slasher that missed out on the slasher's boon by a year, flopped on a limited release in the US, and got less than ceremoniously dumped on the Nasties list in the UK, but only to be dropped off later, as if almost to say that it wasn't quite nasty enough. Almost like a final slap for a film that isn't as loved as possibly it should be. But ask its fans what they think of this thoughtful, slightly creepy slasher, and they will tell you a very different story. The Slayer, aka Nightmare Island, is more than just another of the slashers that have been dumped on the list because of an image of violence in its storytelling. There's something very creepy lurking on this Nightmare Island retreat.
May shock you. It may frighten you more than you've ever been frightened before. Don't worry. It's only a maddening, horrifying nightmare. Or is it?
What are you gonna do?
Fire some flares. Did you give her the pills like I told you?
It's not a nightmare after all.
There's nothing up here.
Are they really alone, or is there an unwelcome guest? Is this a nightmare, or is it the fear we all have when we're alone in the dark? And if it's only a nightmare, why is everybody dead? Prepare yourself, because you will never want to be alone again. Prepare yourself for...
The story follows two siblings. Eric, who's played by Frederick Flynn, and his surreal abstract painter of a sister, Kay, who's played by Sarah Kendall. This being her only real role. She pops up also in Karate Kid 2 as an air stewardess, but that's it. She's with her doctor husband, David, who's played by Alan McRae, and her sister-in-law, Brooke, who's played by Carol Cottonbrook. They're taken to town by a pilot, a guy called Marsh, who's played by Michael Holmes. They basically become stranded on a very rugged island that they've gone on holiday on. They're all in the 30s, and Kay finds that her situation, being trapped on this island, is made far worse as her dreams from her childhood, reoccurring prophetic nightmares in which she's stalked and slain in a burning room known by the as the by a character known as the Slayer. These images have haunted her throughout her life, and now it seems that this place might be the place that it lives. And there's an indication possibly that somehow this entity is lurking close by, waiting until nightfall, where it'd be able to off a K and also kill her friends. For some reason, it seems likely that he's able to do this only through her dreams. When she dreams what's happening, it then happens in real life to the people around her. But it's difficult for Kay because she can't quite grasp what is real and what isn't. And the boundaries between reality and the dream world become blurred. And certainly on this island, not everyone is what it seems.
For the life of me, Kay, I just can't figure out what's bothering you. This new style you're painting isn't you, and if you ask me, you're making a big mistake.
I'm not asking you.
Where the hell are you getting all your ideas anyway?
I paint what I see.
No, you don't. Paint what you dream.
You were headed right for the top, and then out of nowhere, you throw them this surrealist crap. I mean, naturally, the critics are going to tear you apart.
Don't pay any attention to him. He's just had too much vino.
I know what I'm talking about. I've directed enough commercials to know you gotta have a hook. I mean, people have to relate to it. It's got to be real.
It's getting late. I'm going to bed. You want to fish at the break of dawn, you better get some sleep, too.
Yeah, you're right.
Good night, David.
Hey, good night, Brooke. Mm-hmm. See you in the morning.
Good night, Kay. I'll see you in the morning.
Good night, Eric.
Good night, Kate. I love you.
Good night.
You're supposed to be enjoying this.
I don't like it here.
Why not?
Just something about this place.
As much as I hate to admit it, Eric is right. You're building this wall of depression around you.
It's this place. It makes my skin crawl.
Look, it's not this place, Kay, for Christ's sake. It's those damn dreams of yours. Sometimes, honest to God, think you're slipping over the edge.
Great. Just great. Wonderful vacation.
The film is a mixture of slow burn build-up in the first 30 minutes, which, to be fair, mar the opening. But once the violence starts, interestingly, in this case, adults rather than to the usual nubile teenagers of the genre, there is a slow descent into madness for our sensitive artist, Kay. She's a woman whose haircut becomes bigger and crazier as the monsters get closer to her. And there's a mystery element too. What is this monster? Is it really in Kay's dreams? Or is she in the real reason for the killings herself, unable to remember what she's doing outside of these nightmares she's been having? Or is it the pilot, an angry and mysterious gentleman who seems to not like the look of them, and had an air of stay off the moors kind of thing to him? Was the pilot who led them there the person who's doing the killing? More interestingly than the pre-bog standard giallo horror element to it, though, there are elements here of fulci logic, that sense of a dreamlike nonsense on the island, the kind of work that Argento was working at the time as well in films like Suspiria. For example, there's a derelict theatre on this island that seems to, on an island, only features one home. Why is it there? And why does it exist at all? It all alludes that something unknowing is actually happening in the background to Kay. And it's difficult to talk about what makes the film work without spoiling it, in truth. So I will warn you now that I'm going to give away the ending. Because in the end, this film is a monster movie. We are confronted by a beast at the very end. A hugely successful monster that was created by Robert Short, who also worked on Piranha, Shopping Mall, and Galaxy of Terror. It is, it's a brutal looking creature, and he does a great job. And I think for a lot of people who watched it when they were younger, it's that image is the one that sticks in the mind in terms of what's going on. Interestingly, the US release basically gives away the fact that it is a monster, which is a shame, which is, you know, I say spoiler, but if you're American and you've got a copy of it on VHS, you know exactly what our creature looks like. If you look at the UK copy, the old Vipco release, it's a little bit vaguer in terms of that, you know, there's a monster with flames behind it, which I think was the old theatrical poster. The current release is a little bit more obvious, although it's actually taken from the beginning of the film when it is one of the dreams. Speaking to J.R. Kerwell on the Hysteria Lives podcast, it was the guy who wrote the Teenage Wasteland book about slashers as well. Robert Short said, "The Slayer itself was a very uncomfortable mechanical head made of rigid urethane foam, skinned from a foam latex skin. Carl Cranes, who played the monster, couldn't see out the head because of the eye mechanisms. So he was a real trooper about getting the character to work just right. The work on the gore worked well. I was very keen on doing a good job, and really gory effects for films was just coming into vogue. So I wanted to push them as far as I could. I designed the main creature as something that might spring from a local legend from deep in the south. Very decayed, tattered, almost zombie-like. The main feature I wanted was long fingernails and long pointed teeth for the Slayer. Yes, I also did the gore effects such as the pitchfork scene and the severed head in the bed. The head was done with a false bottom bed with the actor using a neck appliance to stimulate the stump." Speaking about the effects with the pitchfork, probably the reason why the film was actually banned in the first place, in truth. Knowing the camera only sees in flat 2D, I knew that I could make a very deep replica of the actress's chest as long as it was in the same width as her real body. That way a spikes on rail system could be built in and attached to the front of the actress and not be seen by the camera. What makes that scene really work is the rain and camera work that creates a real immersive feeling to the shot. I think it's interesting as well that he gets asked about on that interview about the Video Nasties, and he wasn't even aware that the film had been banned in the UK. And on the very good Hysteria Lives podcast, there's actually an interview with Carl Cranes, and again he talks about basically about, you know, it was quite a hard shoot for him being the monster, lots of talk of super glue being used and whatnot, and he's saying, you know, again, he didn't know about the furore at all. And I think that's interesting in itself because, you know, it's such a big thing in the UK for horror fans and, you know, culturally. And yet for a lot of people in the US, even people who made the film, they just don't know about it. I know I have listeners who are American and do know about the furore and obviously have a love for this kind of era of film. But I found it interesting that not everyone does. Or no, not everyone knows about it, at least, you know. These effects, I mean, he says, to be fair to him, he says the camera work is what makes the effects work. But, I mean, the effects are really quite very good. Indeed, Roger Corman said that the effects for The Slayer were some of the best gore effects ever done for a film. I mean, a lot of the credit has to go to the writer and director, J.S. Cardone, who went on to direct Shadow Zone and The Forsaken. And recently, not that recently, it's like 5 years ago now, but he wrote the script for the remake of Prom Night, which had mixed reviews, I think it's fair to say. The film was originally planned to be filmed in LA in the spring of 1980. but it slipped a year and was only filmed in Tybee Island in Georgia in the USA. It's a year later, but spring 81. It looks fairly desolate, and I think it's telling that it was obviously done in spring because it's quite grey and adds to the feeling of gloom. Again, without wishing to spoil, is this spoil heavy statement to make? The final denouncement is the fact that it's actually a premonition from Kay when she was a child. And that could feel like it's an all a dream cheat ending. But here, with all the foreshadowing and dream logic, it all fits into place. And I think it works better than, say, with some other films that pulls that card and doesn't do it very well. And of course, the ideas of the film predate Nightmare on Elm Street. Although, Wes Craven says, he had the script written by 1980, so I don't think it was any direct copying by any stretch of the imagination. And indeed, he takes these ideas and works them in a different way. I think Nightmare on Elm Street owes more to films like Halloween, whereas this owes more to the more of the Italian slasher stuff, Bay of Blood. That kind of slightly twisted logic kind of way. So despite its rather questionable reviews, and indeed the fact that some people really hate that ending, and that's kind of the reason why I mentioned it, because they despise it, I think, and I can understand why they do that, but I think you have to give it a little bit of credit for kind of knowing where it's going. There's some moments where one thing is foreshadows another. For example, one of our people cut themselves with a razor blade, and the high-pitched kind of warning sound kicks in, despite the fact he's just touched himself with a razor. And the reason for that is obviously it's foreshadowing his own death. And interestingly as well, another one of our characters speaks about being hooked on things, only to get a very literal hook into his neck as he gets flung into the ocean. I think that's, it's better thought out, I think, supposed to say, than a lot of horrors from this time, and a lot of horrors of this type as well. But it isn't, I think from modern standards, people will struggle with its slowness. And also, you've got to bear in mind, there aren't that many people on the island. So, the death count is low. It's very low for a film of this type, really. And I think that will be its undoing for a lot of fans. So, would it have been seen differently if it had made it to another year? If it shot in 1980 and had, been released in 81 rather than 82, it might have had a bit more luck. Even by that stage, though, the boom in slashers, one that is all over this video nasties list, was a lot. It was a short period of time, and a lot of films didn't really make the money. You're looking at like Friday the 13th Part 2, Part 3. By that time, certainly by Part 3, unless you were a franchise, people were less interested in it. I think it's fair to say. So it might still have done badly. It certainly would have got the review it had in Variety anyway, which called it plodding. And like a lot of the films that are on this list, they kind of have a bad reputation in terms of being quite trashy. But I don't think that's particularly fair with this example. An interesting film with some fantastic special effects and some rather unusual ideas, which some of which don't work, but generally has a very certain feel to it, with one that, if you're in the right mood for it, can really creep you out. Right, Vipco released the uncut VHS in June of 1982. It appeared on the Video Nasties list in October 1983, but was dropped by April 85. Then re-released on VHS by Vipco with 14 seconds of BBFC cuts. That is to the puncture wound with the rake. And that was released in 1982, finally passed uncut for Vipco and on DVD for 2001. That DVD release is ugly as hell, and it's still the one that's getting put out at the moment. Got re-released again in 2011. It's a horrible Panascan shot thing. It's very grey, very muddy picture. But on the other hand, it's not a looker, but it is an uncut release. The US seemingly still not having a DVD release of The Slayer. You know, it's on a double billed VHS with scalps, but I mean, it has been trimmed just to get it on the video, so, you know, not to the gore, just to run in length, which some people might prefer, to be honest with you, because it does take its time, despite being, you know, a relatively short film. So yeah, I mean, you know, you might notice I'm struggling to get a huge amount of info about the film, and I think that's because there isn't a lot of love for it, and I'm basically saying it's a shame. And I think, particularly if you'd watched it when you were younger, I'm pretty sure that this is a film that holds some very strong memories and I have a lot of love for. But generally, it's just a kind of a creepy, weird film, you know. And that, you know, give it a bit of love just for that.
What are you going to do?
Fire some flares. Did you give her the pills like I told you?
Yeah, I'll put them in the coffee I took up to her.
Good.
Wait a minute. Eric, Kay's seen the killer in her dream. She's convinced that if she goes to sleep again, we'll all die.
Stop it, Brooke.
Why won't you listen?
Let me tell you something you don't know about my sister. When we were kids, my father gave her a kitten one Christmas, and 2 days later, my mother found the animal in the meat freezer we kept in the garage. It was frozen to death. And Kay said something in her dreams did it. My parents sent her to a psychiatrist until she was 16 because of her nightmares. And maybe that strange sensitivity is what makes her such a fine artist, but it's got nothing to do with David's death. What killed him was not a nightmare. It was something very real.
Eric!
What are you doing?
She wants more coffee.
Well, what's wrong?
I don't feel right about what we've done.
You should get some rest, Kay.
I don't want to sleep. You don't understand. I've seen it, Eric.
Seen what?
The thing that killed David.
Now, how did you see
it? In a dream.
That's impossible, Kay.
I saw it. He tried to close the elevator doors, and it was out there waiting for him.
Kay, you've got to understand, you've had a terrible shock. We all have. But it is dangerous to take it too far. I mean, your dream...
One dream! Only one! The same dream over and over again. It started when we lived in the Sackler
house. Oh, that was years ago.
Papa gave me the kitten. I woke up screaming. I remember it, far away coming at me. The sound that it made. It did terrible things. And the more I dreamed it, the more real it became. The theater. I painted it. It was in the dream. And so was the front door to this house. And the word...
What?
Queen. Something. Queen. Don't you see? It was just like a premonition all those years. I've created it. And I'll keep on doing it until it no longer needs me to give it life.
I gave you something that'll make you sleep.
It's just some phenobarb.
No.
It's for your own good, Kay.
No, no.
You'll feel better after you get some sleep.
No, you're hurting her. You're hurting her.
Yeah.
No, no.
Kay.
No.
Kay.
No. Please. No.
Thanks to everyone who's been in contact with me again. It's been fantastic that you're saying hello and stuff. If you want to get hold of me, please do. My email address is videonastiespodcast@gmail.com. You can hold me on my private Twitter. That's @orange_monkey. Or you can go to the website, videonastiespodcast.com. There you can leave comments. There's the trailers for all the podcasts that I've put up, and also the podcasts themselves. And interestingly as well, we've got something new that I put up this week. We've got some reviews from Monster Monthly magazine, which were published back in 1982. And those reviews are of, well, for the Fulci films that were on the list, Nightmare in a Damaged Brain, Possession, and Visiting Hours as well. And I have to give massive thanks to Jim Moon, who does the Hypnobobs podcast and also writes the Hypnagoria website, who has a fantastic library of weird literature and horror-related stuff. And he was able to have a rummage and pull that stuff out for me. So scanned it in, and now they're on the website for you to enjoy. So I do suggest you go there and have a look. Right, well, next week's Easter. So we won't be taking a break, but what I've suggested we do is the only egg-related horror film I can think of that's on the list. Not one of the classics, but an entertaining film nonetheless, particularly if you like people's chests bursting. We're going to do Contamination. Literally the only film I can think of on that list that involves a woman looking at an egg, terrified. Very odd. And an unusual alien as well. I'm looking forward to revisiting that. So, until then, take care, and I'll speak to you soon. Goodbye.
I have never seen a video nasty. I wouldn't. I have far too much.
How can you judge on a video nasty?
Oh,
you've never seen one.
I actually don't need to see visually what I know is in that film.